This is Jim Inkster. Coming today on the show, we'll visit with LSU Mass Communication Professor Bob Mann, who also is a former political aide to Senators Russell Long, John Breaux, Bennett Johnston, and Governor Kathleen Blanco. Bob Mann has some thoughts about the political winds of 2014, and the biggest story in Louisiana the last week has focused upon Congressman Vance McAllister. The Louisiana GOP is calling for the head of one of its own, 7 years after giving Senator David Vitter a pass on a sexual indiscretion. We'll also hear, if everything goes according to form, from the Democratic caucus leader in the Louisiana House of Representatives, John Bell Edwards. He has some insights about what's going on at the Capitol and in the political world. He's a candidate for governor next year. Now the news. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge, 297-5633, 877-217-5757, and InksterShow at WRKF.org. We're going to hear through much of the hour today from Bob Mann, the LSU Mass Communication Professor and also a columnist for NOLA.com, and he has some thoughts about the political winds of Louisiana as we know them right now, but also a guy who's on the front lines at the Capitol as head of the Democratic caucus and is a candidate for governor for 2015, the Honorable John Bell Edwards, representative from AMEET. Good morning, Representative Edwards.
Good morning, Jim, and it's a pleasure to be with you and Bob and all of your listeners this morning.
Well, very good. Now, last Friday, let's get right to it, you sent out a scorching email about how you thought the Republican Party was engaging in hypocrisy by calling for the head of Vance McAllister and giving David Vitter a pass 7 years ago when he was snared in a sexual misconduct story. Maybe you've had a chance to think about those remarks. Are you standing by them?
Oh, sure. Look, it's not even a close call from me.
All right. Let's see what's going on here. But we just lost the representative, and he says it's not even a close call. And Bob Mann, since we do have you in studio, we'll get the phone lines cleaned up. What do you think about the so-called double standard that's going on here?
Well, it is a double standard, and it's an interesting one that a lot of people have noted in political circles, but also I noticed in reading the story in the New York Times this morning, the reporter who spent the weekend up in Monroe interviewing people on the street, they were noting it as well. I think it's an obvious conflict of principles here that when a senior United States senator who's well ensconced and very much a part of the Republican establishment commits a sexual sin, as Senator Vitter called it, then it's okay, and we'll support him for re-election. If it's someone like Vance McAllister, who is not a part of that establishment, is a newcomer, and who, by the way, is asking some politically uncomfortable questions on some of the Republican policies, such as Medicaid expansion, health care for the working poor, that person doesn't get the same amount of sympathy or respect or forbearance from those same people. And it's raising some uncomfortable questions for Republican leaders who seem to have a double standard. Now, you know, I think Democrats have that same double standard in a lot of cases, and those should be pointed out as well. But right now, it's Senator Vitter whose standard is being questioned in an uncomfortable way for him, I'm sure.
All right, I think we got Representative Edwards squared away. At least I hope so. And
there you go. I can listen. I don't know if I can speak.
Yeah, well, you tore up the phone line so much that you were overpowering us. But you say there's definitely hypocrisy here. And even Dan Kyle, who's a Republican Party chair, has said he doesn't know why the GOP is so quick to pounce on McAllister and gave Senator Vitter a pass. May have something to do with the fact that Vitter had 3 years left on his term. There was a Democratic governor in office, so presumably a Democrat would have replaced him if he had resigned from the Senate in 2007. a lot of mitigating factors may have gone beyond the actual scandal itself, but the old saying, what's fair for the goose is fair for the gander. Representative Edwards, are you making political hay out of this, or is, since Zavitter is also a candidate in the governor's race, or do you have sincere and poignant thoughts about where we're going in Louisiana with one man getting a total pass and the other man being told to leave?
Well, clearly I'm saying what I truly believe, but Senator Vitter, as you know, was not called upon to resign by the same people who are, in fact, calling on Vance McAllister to do so, and they can't enunciate any principal distinction between the two situations. And the considerations you mentioned...
All right. We've got a bit of an issue here. Watch the levels in there, and maybe we can not have this continuing problem with the audio coming from the phone line with Representative Edwards. Okay, you were saying about Senator Vitter. In your missive last Friday, Representative Edwards, you said that he actually was making dates with these prostitutes from his desk on the House floor. That, in some cases, would be a call for resignation, but in this case, it was not. If he were a Democrat, would you have asked for his resignation in 2007?
Well, I suspect that I would have, but I have never called on anybody in the past to resign. Not Vitter when he did it, and not McAllister this time. They're going to have to work through that themselves, and ultimately the voters are going to decide whether they want these people to serve should they not resign. My whole point in that press release Friday was the hypocritical double standard coming from the establishment within the Republican Party, principally Chairman Villery, but also Governor Jindal, whose approach to the McAllister situation is completely at odds with the way they handled Senator Vitter several years ago. There is not a principal distinction to make, and you were talking a while ago about how we had a Democratic governor at the time and he had 3 years to reelection. Well, those are all political considerations. But what they're saying now is this is all about principle. This is all about whether he has the right character to stay and serve and that sort of thing. And I don't know how they can make that distinction between Congressman McAllister and Senator Vitter. And I want you to know that in the northern Tashville Parish where I live, Vance McAllister is my congressman. I know him a little bit. I am extremely disappointed in him. I feel very sorry for his wife and his children and his family. And hopefully they can find a way to get through this.
Doesn't look like he's going to resign, at least not yet. He's not responded to these calls to get out of Dodge, and I guess why should he?
Well, that's a determination he's going to have to make, and I guess he would follow the precedent set by Senator Vitter if he doesn't.
And, Bob, he may very well get reelected if he runs this fall.
Well, I guess it's possible. I think this makes this race. He would have had opposition regardless, but I think he'll have a lot more opposition, and there may be more Democrats who will be getting into this race than would have otherwise. I'm not so sure I would bet a lot of money on him getting reelected, but as Representative Edwards said, it looks like he's determined that he's going to follow the path that Senator Vitter did, and that is put his head down and see if he can get through this and get on the other side of it and at least have a fighting chance to get reelected. But it doesn't appear that he's going to resign anytime soon.
Well, Representative, Congressman McAllister, he was on your side on the Medicaid expansion, and I'm sure that's why Governor Jindal doesn't particularly like him. And, of course, he also beat Jindal's handpicked candidate, Senator Neil Reiser, for this job. So, perhaps it's not so surprising that Governor Jindal is on his case. Leonard Joseph writes, it's not a double standard, a convenient standard. And I don't think there's any surprise from Bobby Jindal, who was in Congress when David Vitter had his problem 7 years ago. He was not governor. But the same party chair is there, Roger Villery. And Roger Villery has some answers to give regarding one stand on Vitter and another on McAllister. Do you think this will have any political relevance in the days to come?
Well, I think it will. First of all, it serves as a reminder to the people of Louisiana exactly what Senator Vitter did, insofar as we can ascertain what he did, because, as you know, he's never answered a single question on this incident. But so I don't think any of this is good for the state of Louisiana right now. It's not good for the Republican Party, for Vitter or McAllister. And I don't want you to forget that Senator Reiser's campaign was also led by Mr. Teeple, who is former chief of staff to Governor Jindal. And there was clearly some conflict there between Congressman McAllister and the governor's office based on some public comments he made during the Washington Mardi Gras and otherwise. So I'm sure that there's no love lost there. But that in itself also doesn't explain the double standard in the way that they're treating Congressman McAllister.
297-5633-877-217-5757. Representative John Bel Edwards with us, and also is in studio Bob Mann, the pundit and professor. Aaron in Prairieville. Aaron, good morning. You're on the air.
Guys, I have a couple things to say. First of all, I think McAllister is following the trail that Bill Clinton and John Kennedy set before him, not just David Vitter. Let's not make this thing so one-sided and obvious. They did the exact same thing and followed the exact same path. But, Mr. Edwards, why is it that you don't want to allow individuals to keep their right to a jury or even have the right to a jury in civil trials?
All right, that's not on point, but if you want to answer the question, I think Aaron is actually an operative with Republican Party, and we're glad he called this morning. And I imagine you're going to hear a lot about being a trial lawyer in the next year when you're seeking the governor's office.
I'm sure that I will, and of course there are lots of reasons why lowering the jury trial threshold is not in the best interest of this state, and a lot of them are offered by judges and clerks and DAs and police juries and others around the state who would say that, unlike other states where you have a very low jury trial threshold, we don't support our court system, our civil justice system, I should say, through taxes. So all the costs are on individuals, the litigants before the court, and that makes a big difference. Secondly, there is no reason to believe that judges are fundamentally different than juries when it comes to siding for plaintiffs or defendants, and when they side for plaintiffs, how much they award. But it seems an awfully inefficient way to me to resolve a very low-dollar dispute to have 12 people miss work, have those employers miss their workers for that day or for those 2 or 3 days, to decide a case where you might have $6,000 or $8,000 in property damage as to who's going to have to pay that. Our judges are more than competent to do that, and so I don't favor changing the jury trial threshold.
297-5633, your number. Bob Mann, what about Aaron's statement regarding JFK and Bill Clinton? Is this analogous to Vitter and McAllister?
Well, I don't know. In some ways it may be. I think what initially offended a lot of people, and I would count myself among those, was that McAllister ran as a family values, let me take our Christian values to Washington. That seemed to be a pretty big part of his campaign, portraying himself to be a very religious family man. And then it turns out that indeed he was not, at least in this case. And I think it was the hypocrisy that offended a lot of people. And I'm not sure that everybody who's been caught in one of these sex scandals can be accused of the same kind of hypocrisy. Maybe Clinton did. I don't know. I don't remember how he ran as far as using his family, and I don't think Kennedy really did. That doesn't make the behavior any more palatable to most people. But I think there's also a level of hypocrisy here that really turns off voters, and which I think may be politically hazardous for any Democrat or Republican running for re-election.
297-5633. We'll take a short break. We'll return with Representative John Bel Edwards, leader of the Democratic House Caucus at the Louisiana Capitol. We're halfway through the 2014 session, and we'll talk with him about some issues that are permeating at the state capitol. And Bob Mann, who is a professor of journalism at LSU, has been for the last 8 years, and the author of several books about national politics, civil rights movement, and longtime Democratic pundit, now a columnist for NOLA.com. 877-217-5757, wherever you may be. And we've gotten a few emails about Bobby Jindal, the governor, being parodied on Saturday Night Live. We'll return in 90 seconds. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number outside the area, 877-217-5757. State Representative John Bell Edwards in-house, along with Bob Mann, a political analyst, columnist, and frequent writer and blogger, and a guy who follows Louisiana politics and has for the last 20 or 30 years about as closely as anybody. And you may reach us by email, inkstershow@wrkf.org. Before we get to other matters, I did, as noted going into the break, get a few listener responses from people who were either amused or offended by the Saturday Night Live segment Saturday, opening the show depicting Bobby Jindal as a drugged out space cadet, and a lady actually played him in the skit. John Bell Edwards, were you watching Saturday?
I did not. That's past my bedtime.
Yeah, you still have that West Point mentality, right? Early to bed, early to rise.
Yes,
well,
sir.
Actually, to be parodied on Saturday Night Live is a flattering thing, but most men would not appreciate a woman doing the acting. Bob, you're smiling. This is even worse than Gridiron for the governor, and he's always a good sport about Gridiron, but it's not the kind of portrayal I think that he wants on the national level.
Maybe not, but I would say that that's probably a percentage of that that is probably good for him, for his name recognition, that they thought him significant enough to parody is probably not a bad thing for him. Now, I do agree that it's not always a good thing for you either. Ask Sarah Palin how being parodied on Saturday Night Live worked for her. But to the extent that the writers at Saturday Night Live thought that Jindal was significant enough to put in the skit, mm-hmm. they could have picked four or five other people, and they chose Jindal. So that may say something.
And another listener notes that men have played women in the Gridiron Show in Louisiana, most notably folks playing Gene Armstrong, my good friend and former neighbor. I think Jeff Duhay did it once, and Chris Frank, who John Bell Edwards knows, I think he played Gene Armstrong once. And Bobby Jindal, this actress or comedian who was depicting him, she is from Iran, isn't she?
I believe that's right, yeah.
Okay. Ellen in Sherwood. Ellen, good morning. You're on the air with John Bell Edwards.
I'm so glad to be able to hear John Bell Edwards. He's a great hero to a lot of us in the state, an honest, intelligent man. I followed him in the state legislature for years. I don't know, a lot of people don't give him much of a chance in the governor's race, and I hope and pray that a billionaire will come around and support him.
All right. How much money is it going to take to run for governor next year?
Oh, it's going to take several million dollars, in order to run. And I appreciate Ellen's comments. And if I can get her phone number, I'll call her. Maybe she's one of those billionaires. But no, it's going to be a competitive election. I'm convinced. And there absolutely is a sense among the people in Louisiana that we've got to change direction. We've got to do something different. And fundamentally different. And as you know, there's growing opposition to the course that has been charted by Governor Jindal, and I've been sounding the alarm on that course for several years now. So I get a lot of credit with people around the state for having been against some of these things the governor was for back when he was still popular, and it was a very difficult thing to do. And so people like Ellen have been following. But look, the reception that I get when I travel the state is very encouraging. This idea that I'm a tremendous underdog, you know, I'll take the underdog role, but I actually like the way things are progressing in this race.
John in Lafayette, good morning, John. You're on the air with John Bell Edwards
good morning,
and Bob Mann.
Representative Edwards. I saw in the paper yesterday where higher education is once again going to be betrayed by our legislators. The governor promised an additional, easily, $40 million to higher education this year. And now the legislators are saying, well, we don't know if we can find the $40 million out of a $25 billion budget. I'd appreciate your thoughts on that.
Well, first of all, I suspect at the end of the day we are going to find that $40 million. But we did approve on the House side the bill that would create the structure by which we would pool $40 million and allow the universities to draw from that as they showed that they were going to be able to spend that money to further our ability to meet our workforce demands going into the future. And now we have to actually find the money. One of the problems we have is we are not in terribly good shape fiscally in this state. And I know that what we've been saying out of Baton Rouge, and not, when I say we, I'm talking about state government, principally the governor, is that we've outperformed the nation as a whole, and we're far ahead of where the South is in terms of job creation, economic development. None of these things have translated into revenue that's coming into the state of Louisiana, even to meet the projections. And so we're having a hard time financing basic obligations of the state, like higher education. It would mark a tremendous improvement if we simply allowed the universities this year, for the first time in 6 years, to keep the tuition increases. But what we were trying to do on top of the tuition increases is to find $40 million of state general fund support that we would add to what we spend on higher education, and that is contrasted with the $700 million reduction in state general fund support for higher education that we've seen over the last several years. Now, I think we will find it. A lot of it is going to depend upon the revenue estimating conference and what number they come out with when they meet in a couple of weeks. But we're under tremendous pressure to find that money, and I think we will. But there will be many areas of the state government where we won't be able to invest as we should to take care of our people.
Couple of items, Representative, a few listeners have noted that you voted with the governor or with the governor's sentiments to revise or do away with Common Core. What was going on a few weeks ago when this was the hot issue at the Capitol?
Well, I appreciate the question, Jim. The reporting on that particular bill I have found to be less than adequate. The bill, as it was introduced by Representative Guyman, would have, in fact, pulled Louisiana out of Common Core. That is not the bill that we actually voted on in committee, because it had been amended merely to provide a two-year, basically a pause, where we would keep the standards we have today, which are by and large already aligned with Common Core, because we've started the implementation of Common Core in Louisiana. But it was going to be a two-year pause where we could give our school systems and our schools and our teachers an opportunity to actually implement the new standards in a way that would benefit our students more and cause less turbulence and that sort of thing. And in the meantime, have a group of Louisianans look at those standards to try to make sure that they were, in fact, in the best interest of our students. It was something that was asked for by school superintendents across the state of Louisiana, the school boards across the state of Louisiana. And so I never viewed that vote as a pure anti-Common Core vote. I thought it would give us an opportunity to fix what almost everybody agrees has been a very poor implementation of the Common Core standards.
But in this case, you were in concert with the governor. Every now and then it happens.
Well, yeah, you know, you only get to vote yes or no. And there's not a lot of positions that you can take on these bills. I can tell you that no one from the governor's office spoke to me about that particular bill. And I happen to believe it's one of those bills where when they read in the card in support of the bill that came from the governor's office, it was completely after the fact. I don't think it made a difference for any single legislator on the committee and how they voted.
Dan downtown. Dan, good morning. You're on WRKF. Hi, Dan.
Yes. It's an explanation for the different treatment of McAllister and Vitter that in an election year, McAllister gets in the way of the GOP trotting out the three G's, you know, God, gays, and guns, to get poor white people to get to vote against their own economic interest with these cultural wedge issues.
Well, if you're asking me that question, I mean, that certainly could play into their decision-making as to why they decided to go after Vance McAllister in a way they were unwilling, unable to do with respect to Senator Vitter. You can't say that there's a qualitative difference between the actions of the two people. And so you just have to attribute it to something related more to politics than principle. And so, I mean, your guess is as good as mine.
Well, McAllister, right now, all we know is that he kissed a woman on camera who was not his wife, who was the best friend of his wife, his best friend's wife. They contributed to his campaign, but she worked for him. So that does add another layer of complexity to this case, is that she was on the payroll, courtesy of the taxpayers. Some would say that's a greater sin than any kind of relationship that might have been going on between the two of them.
Well, clearly it's improper, and it's not consistent with what he told us about himself when he was running. It's not in the best interest of the people that he represents to, you know, that he would engage in that type of conduct. Nobody is condoning that. I suspect he is having a very tough time personally. But at the end of the day, I still don't know how there is a qualitative difference that would justify demanding his resignation and not that of others. And by the way, if I remember correctly, Senator Vitter absolutely demanded that Clinton resign.
He did.
He was unfit to lead and that sort of stuff. And so there's just this hypocritical double standard. And that's, to me, more of the issue and what the story should be about in Louisiana right now.
Okay. Another listener, Travis, asks, Representative Edwards, and we'll ask this of Bob too, would you be accepting if Congressman McAllister opted to become a Democrat? That would kind of
that is so hypothetical. You know, obviously he gets to do that if he wants. All it takes is signing a card to change it, just like Congressman Alexander did. It's not very difficult.
What would that? That would be an interesting development, Bob. If he then suddenly that takes Roger Villery off the hook, I think.
Well, it might. It's kind of hard to see that happening, though. This is a guy who planted his flag pretty deeply into Republican soil, even though he disagrees with Republicans on a few issues, including Medicaid expansion. But he's been on the record as saying he would vote to, and has voted to, repeal the Affordable Care Act. It would be, I don't think, a very convincing argument to say that I've suddenly had a change of mind and I'm now more of a Democrat just because he got caught kissing one of his staffers.
Anne in Slidell. Anne, please be brief. You're on with John Bell Edwards and Bob Mann.
Hi. I'm curious, John Bell, as governor, do you have any plans to address the severe revenue shortages that we face in the state of Louisiana due to the extreme and completely irrational cut approach that's been taken by our Republican administration?
And that's a great question. Yes, we do. First of all, we're not going to decline our own federal tax dollars coming back into Louisiana when we can use them to help our own people. I'm talking about the $80 million that we turned away that would expand broadband access, the $40 million that we turned away that would help standardize and offer increased access to pre-K education. But most importantly, expanding health care to the working poor through the Medicaid expansion. That is incredibly important if we're going to have the money that we need, not only to offer them health care, but to reimburse our hospitals, doctors, and clinics who do so. And in light of the fact that the DISH dollars will go away by 75% by the end of the decade, and that's how we currently reimburse our hospitals. But more importantly, as we're finding out, the federal government, through the CMS, has not approved the lease payment plan that has been put forth by the state in order to try to draw down federal dollars to pay for these privatized hospital operations. So if you don't have the DISH dollars on the back end and you don't have the lease on the front end, we have no way to meet our obligations to these hospitals so that we can continue providing care to our people. So those things are all critically important if we're going to move forward and have the revenue necessary to run state government, because, as you know, money is fungible. If you've got more money for health care, then that's money that you can put towards education, public safety, road infrastructure. But the other critical
component there is we have to look at our tax expenditures and just take some small portion of the $5 billion in tax expenditures that we have on the books today and see whether it really makes sense to continue those. Are we getting the bang for the buck that we were promised? And I happen to know in several areas we are not. And so we can do better in by saving money through tax expenditures to help run government and meet our obligations to the people of Louisiana.
Mike in Sherwood, you'll be the final caller for John Bell Edwards, and Bob Mann will be with us for the remainder of the hour. 297-5633 if you'd like to join the conversation. But Mike, go ahead. I know you've been waiting for some time.
Hello. I just had a quick question observation. Instead of a qualitative difference between McAllister and Vitter, I'd point out a quantitative one. Ask yourself the question, who has the deeper war chest? I'd be willing to suspect that Vitter's deep campaign war chest for running offices is a big part of that decision. I'll take my answer off the air.
Money often determines how we act about things in life, particularly in politics. I don't know if that's the case right now. McAllister, by the way, has a personal fortune that is quite substantial, but he was a maverick Republican when he campaigned. I guess the question would be if Neil Reiser had gotten caught up in the same scandal, and he hasn't, but if the mortician from Columbia, who was supported by Governor Jindal for this post, my guess is that they, being the Republican hierarchy, would not be calling for Reiser's head the way they are McAllister's. Just a guess. Your final thoughts on this topic and others, Representative Edwards.
Well, I just want to repeat that my thoughts and prayers go out to Congressman McAllister's family, his wife and kids. Whatever he might deserve, they don't deserve any of this, and we should not ever forget to remember that and to, you know, try to keep them in our thoughts. But it is important, I think, that we understand why there is a double standard, and it's certainly not one that's principled. It's a political consideration that is driving Chairman Villery and Governor Vitter to demand something of McAllister that they were unwilling to demand of Senator Vitter when the two sex scandals were at least equally serious.
Well, thank you, Representative Edwards. It's always a pleasure. I know you're busy at the Capitol. We'll let you go, and let's talk soon.
Thank you very much. Appreciate you and Bob and all your listeners.
Thank you. And John Bell Edwards, perhaps a Freudian slip, he said Governor Vitter, the man he's trying to beat. It is interesting that he is coming after David Vitter right now. He's not waiting a year to do it, and some would say it might be in John Bell Edwards' benefit, Bob, to be in a runoff with Senator Vitter rather than another Republican for governor next year. But he's going after the junior senator from the great state of Louisiana.
Yes, he is. And as I wrote last week in my column that David Vitter, I think, got through his reelection campaign in 2010 without having to answer really any questions. No one ever attacked him for the prostitution scandal. I don't think he'll be so lucky in 2015 when he runs for governor. And I think John Bell Edwards is showing that he's not going to let him off scot-free.
We'll hear from the astute Bob Mann solo when we return. 297-5633, 877-217-5757. And Bob, by the way, has been harsh on the political resurgence of his fellow Democrat, Edwin Washington Edwards. We'll talk about that as well. Another Edwards, back in 90 seconds. This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number, 877-217-5757, Inkster Show at WRKF.org. Bob Mann is the guest, and he is a man who follows Louisiana politics as closely as anybody I know, and he has worked for several Democrats, including three U.S. senators, legendary figures, John Breaux, Russell Long, Bennett Johnston, and Governor Kathleen Blanco, and he was scheduled to be with us on the day of August 29th, 2005. Something happened that day called Katrina, which changed the world and changed the political environment in Louisiana. Now, Elliot Stonecipher has noted, Bob, that Senator Vitter benefited enormously by running 2 years after President Obama won. That if John McCain had won the presidential election in 08, it's quite possible Vitter would have been unseated. And Senator Landrieu probably benefited when she was on the same ballot when Barack Obama ran and won at the national election. And even though he didn't win in Louisiana, a lot of Landrieu-leaning voters came out in large numbers. So timing is everything in politics.
Yeah, it is. And that's one of the reasons why I think Vitter was reelected in 2010. It wasn't so much that people had, I think, processed and had gone through this act of forgiveness when it came to the prostitution scandal or whatever they thought about him. I think it was because Vitter was masterful in framing that election as a referendum on Barack Obama, who had just been elected 2 years earlier, and it was on the heels of the passage of the Affordable Care Act, and there were a lot of Republicans who were opposed to that and worked up about it, and he made that election a referendum on Barack Obama, not himself, and Congressman Melanson really didn't make that election a referendum on David Vitter, like I think you're seeing maybe John Bel Edwards will do next year. But timing is everything. If Barack Obama had not been on the ballot in 2008, it's likely that Mary Landrieu might not have been reelected. She benefited by a massive turnout of African Americans in the state.
Now, in today's New York Times, Bob Mann is quoted about the McAllister situation and the calls for him to step down from Republicans. Bob says it reeks of old-time backroom Louisiana political hijinks. No doubt there's a political element. Scott Wilfong was on this show last week and pretty much acknowledged that. But it's all about winning elections and winning elections with people you want to win them. And McAllister was not the guy the Republican hierarchy wanted, and here's their chance to nail him, they think. And they probably didn't think through the obvious double standard about David Vitter. Otherwise, they might not have gone this direction.
Well, there is also the thought that some people have entertained. Clancy Dubose, I believe, wrote about it or has spoken about it down in New Orleans, that the Jindal, in this Machiavellian way, perhaps wanted the questions to arise when he called on McAllister to resign, knowing that it would spark a lot of comment from people and the pundits about, well, your double standard, what about Vitter? And now we're all talking about Vitter in a way that we maybe wouldn't have if Jindal hadn't demanded that that McAllister quit that job because of what you say, what you pointed out, or similar infractions. So I'm not so sure I believe that, but it's the motivation behind all of this is another part of this story and a subtext of, you know, how did this tape become public? Who leaked it? Who had an interest in seeing it leaked? Mm-hmm. Why did it go to this little small paper with a 5,000 circulation when there was a fairly prominent daily Gannett newspaper just a mile down the road?
You used to work there, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. I did. Yeah. So there's a lot of questions, I think, that maybe not so much people on the street have, but a lot of the political insiders who know what's going on here and how deeply involved Jindal and his former chief of staff, Timmy Tepl, were in the election, and how much they resent, I think, the fact that they got beat so badly by a neophyte. And my guess is they never stopped wanting to figure out a way to win that seat back and make sure that their guy Reiser is in that seat come November.
And the relationship between Governor Jindal and Senator Vitter has never been close. And that was evidenced the day that Senator Vitter made his apology. He did so at the same time in the same city that Bobby Jindal was announcing his candidacy for governor. So people remember those kinds of things, and Bobby Jindal probably could care less what David Vitter thinks about this. But that will be an interesting development in the days to come. Congressman Cassidy, for example, was hired Timmy Tepl and then got rid of him and now has Vitter's campaign people around him. Vitter is supporting Jeff Landrieu for attorney general and Billy Nungesser for lieutenant governor and himself for governor. And if he wins that, he gets to appoint the successor to himself in the U.S. Senate. As Roy Fletcher said, Bob, we're talking about potentially Governor Vitter, if it happens, becoming the most powerful or maybe even more powerful than Huey Pierce Long. He would be formidable.
Well, he would be formidable, and I think he is more interested in pulling the levers of power in Louisiana than Jindal has ever been. I mean, Jindal gets a lot of criticism for firing people and not tolerating criticism or dissent within his ranks, and that all that criticism is justified. But fundamentally, Jindal has never really been that interested in being governor. He's been interested in using the governorship as a stepping stone to either get on somebody's vice presidential ticket or launch a presidential campaign, which he's doing. Vitter knows that this will be the only office, if he gets elected governor, will be the only office he'll ever have. And I think that he will devote himself to Louisiana politics without distraction. And that if you like David Vitter, that's a good thing. If you're not so crazy about David Vitter, that could be a pretty bad thing.
John DiGiulio writes, a distinction not mentioned yet, at least not today. It has been in previous shows, but what Vitter did was a criminal violation, while McAllister's actions, kissing somebody, no criminal violation there as far as I know, so and as far as John writes. So, yes, if Senator Vitter consorted with prostitutes, and there is ample evidence he did, and he has not denied that, then yes, he committed a criminal violation. But that's a long time ago.
Well, it is. And one thing that I'd like to point out, too, that I think what was really at play here and the real difference in this situation is not the degree of sexual immorality or however you want to describe it, but the fact is that Vance McAllister represents a heavily Democratic district, a heavily Republican district, and it's likely that whoever replaces him is going to be a Republican. By calling on him to resign, they are not really risking that some Democrat is going to capture that seat. If they had demanded that David Vitter resign in the summer of 2007, Kathleen Blanco, Democratic governor Kathleen Blanco, would have appointed Vitter's replacement. And so they were protecting the Senate seat from Louisiana and potentially the Republican majority in Congress at that time. They had a real stake in who got to appoint Vitter's replacement, and it could not be Kathleen Blanco. That's why they all kept quiet. That's why they all closed ranks around David Vitter. They didn't want Kathleen Blanco to appoint a Democrat to that seat.
Okay. Well, in the 6th District, Edwin Edwards is running at 86, trying to go back to Capitol Hill 50 years after his first arrival as a U.S. House member, and trying to become the last member of the greatest generation to serve in Congress. The last World War II veteran would be Edwin Edwards, if elected. Bob Mann says that's not going to happen. Are you sticking by your guns?
Well, Charlie Cook, who I know has been on the show before and who's a Louisianian, but also one of the more respected political handicappers in Washington, the editor of the Cook Political Report, rates the 6th District of Louisiana as the 24th most conservative congressional district in the country out of 435. So the idea that a Democrat is going to win this seat is fantasy. And I think that even if you had a Democrat who hadn't just emerged from 8 years in prison with the record that Edwin Edwards has and the reputation that he has, that person could not win. I've had friends who sort of castigated me for saying some of this, saying, well, this is the Democratic Party is, why, you know, you should be criticizing them for not running someone stronger, not running someone else. And my point is, the reason that other Democrats aren't running in this race is because they cannot win. It is not a Democratic district.
It is not a Democratic district, but there is only one Edwin Edwards, and there is a poll, one, that showed him at 43%. But, of course, you got to get 50 plus one to win. And Edwin Edwards is running in a district that's only about 20% African-American, even if African-Americans show up proportionately, which usually black voters do not vote in the same percentage as whites. So he would need probably about 40% of the white vote in that district to win.
That's right.
That would be a daunting prospect for him, even in his heyday. But we're a forgiving state. We've proved that time and again, and he is a colorful character. He would add some pizzazz to the congressional scene.
I think that the reason people would vote against Edwin Edwards, the reason a lot of white Republicans would vote against Edwin Edwards, is not because of his prison term or because of what they may or may not believe about his morality, but because he's a Democrat. I mean, it's just as simple as that. You just don't get elected in districts as conservative as this one if you're a Democrat. It just does not happen. This is not a competitive district for any Democrat. That's why Edwin Edwards is the only one running, and he's taking advantage mm-hmm. of that situation. I think he's a he's got a pretty good chance of making the runoff, but beyond that, I don't really think there's much of a chance that he gets elected. In fact, I would say that maybe Edwin Edwards' greatest fear is he would get elected. I don't think he really wants to serve. I think he wants to enjoy his day in the sun. The reality show got canceled, and this is another way to catapult himself into the public eye, and I think he's going to enjoy every minute of it, but I think the state's reputation is not going to enjoy the attention that we get around the world from having this disgraced former four-term governor who just spent 8 years in prison as the standard bearer for the Democratic Party in the sixth district of Louisiana. That will not make us look like a place where you want to come and do business.
Well, Bob's not hot on Governor Edwards. I suspect at times through the years you mentioned you associated with him when you were a young journalist, that you actually rode around the state with him and then voted for David Treen.
That's right. Yep. Yeah, no, I did. I voted for Dave Treen. But Edwin Edwards has always been very nice and kind and courteous to me. When I've called, he's returned my phone calls. And personally, I have nothing against the man. I just think that he truly fears winning this race because he does not want to be the congressman from the 6th district of Louisiana. He wants to be in the runoff, and he wants to enjoy the accolades, and he wants to enjoy his time in the limelight. Because he knows as well as you and I do that he cannot win this race.
I think he's a pretty good bean counter. But,
yes, he is.
But on the other hand, I think that he thinks he has a shot. I really do. And he could run in the 5th district where he would have a better shot probably because that district is over 30% African American, and black voters have traditionally supported Governor Edwards, and they quite likely would do so again. And we could have the delicious prospect, if that happened, of a runoff between Edwards and McAllister.
Yeah. I think he's, I mean, he could run. There's nothing to stop him from going
and
up there.
And he could probably beat Vance McAllister.
Yeah, but I'm not sure if McAllister would be the one he'd be running against in a runoff.
I don't know. It could happen. But suddenly it was thought that there would be a runoff in the 6th district with Edwards and maybe Dan Clater or Garrett Graves or Paul Dietzel. And that would be the only other race other than Mary Landrieu and most likely Bill Cassidy. Now we quite possibly will have a runoff in the 5th district. Elliot Stonecipher says that even John Fleming might be pushed to a runoff. Suddenly mm-hmm. we may have some more action in December than we thought we would.
Yeah, and that helps, as Elliot has pointed out and others have pointed out, that helps potentially helps Mary Landrieu because it's to her benefit that this is a very competitive state, that there are a lot of races around this state that are getting people to the polls because the higher the overall turnout, the better that is going to be for a Democrat running. Republicans are going to do better probably nationwide because the midterm election electorate is usually wider and older than the presidential years. And all these races make it a little more competitive for her. Potentially Edwin Edwards helps her a lot by getting African-American voters out. That's assuming that Edwards is still as strong with African-American voters as people think he is and as he probably hopes he is. But, you know, a lot of these younger African-American voters were in diapers when Edwin Edwards or weren't even born when Edwin Edwards was governor last time. And I'm not sure why they would have any more affinity for him than anybody else.
Well, African-Americans have supported Democrats in large numbers, no matter who they are. But Edwin Edwards, he's, for example, when he ran against David Duke, he only got about 40% of the white vote. And he beat Duke by 22 points because he got 96% of the black vote.
Yeah, right.
Exit poll showed 4% of the black voters in 1991 voted for David Duke. 25,000 people in this state. That's an interesting thing. That would be a good dissertation from one of your students. Like, what in the world would compel a black person to vote for David Duke?
Yeah, I can't imagine, but you know, every election, about 5% of the black vote goes to the Republican.
Just about. But when you get 95% of the black vote and it's 30% of the vote in the state as it is, Democrats generally, like Mary Landrieu, she'll probably only need 35% of the white vote to win, but she'll have a tough time getting that.
Yeah, it's going to be difficult. It's a hard one. But I think Mary Landrieu wins or loses by a couple of points either way. It's mm-hmm. going to be a close. It's going to be a close race, and a lot of it's going to depend on what kind of candidate Cassidy is, And I think a lot of people have even in the Republican Party, have questions about Cassidy and how exciting a candidate he's going to be and how much he's going to inspire Republicans, not to mention that he's got two other Republicans running against him, potentially pulling votes off of him, making it more likely there will be a runoff in December.
Jacques asked Bob, do you think Alandru, either Mary or Mitch, Mary if she would lose the senator race, either will one of them be in the governor's race next year?
Well, there's a lot of speculation about Mitch Landru, and there are a lot of Democrats who want him to run. I have a feeling that John Bel Edwards will not be the only major Democrat in this race next year. I'm hearing also that Jim Bernhard is talking seriously, very seriously, about getting into this race.
And he's got the war chest to do it. And David Vitter, I would guess $15 million next year when he runs for governor, be a conservative.
Yeah, wouldn't surprise me.
He'll be printing money, and he'll be a formidable candidate. And right now, I think we can agree he's the favorite.
I think so, yeah.
Well, let's talk soon. And Bob Mann will be in the host chair very soon as a guest host again. We always appreciate it when he does that. Always good to talk with you, Bob.
Thanks, Jim.
And thanks for listening, everybody. Stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. Views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.